Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. It's coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I'm Douglas Simpuga. This evening we'll talk about the recent Human Rights Watch report on last year's killings in Uganda. And with us tonight is Charles Mwanguhi Ampaji. Charles is the bureau chief of the East African newspaper in Uganda. He joins us by phone from Kampala. Good evening, Charles.
Good evening, Douglas.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And also we're joined by Suleiman Mugula, a regular panelist. He joins us from Durban, South Africa. He's an independent political analyst. Welcome to the show, Suleiman.
Thank you very much for inviting me and giving to Charles also.
Thank you.
Good evening, Sliman.
Yes, as I just said, we'll be talking about the report released on Wednesday by Human Rights Watch, which has called for international investigation into last November's killings in Kasese in Western Uganda, which left more than 100 people dead. Releasing the report on Wednesday, Maria Barnett, Associate African Director at Human Rights Watch, called for an independent, impartial fact-finding mission with international expertise. Let's first hear her remarks at the release of the report, then start from there.
In November 2016, political tensions between the government of Uganda and the traditional kingdom in Western Uganda came to a head. The military and the police escalated their deployments, surrounded the palace of the local traditional king, and ultimately carried out a brutal assault on the compound. One of the videos shows the compound clearly on fire. It also shows soldiers bringing out groups of people whose arms have been tied behind their backs. It shows soldiers beating people clearly with machetes and sticks. And we remain very concerned that footage like this indicates that there are serious questions about the use of force during the military assault on the compound. The Ugandan military argues that it killed armed fighters.
We had to storm the palace and get these terrorists. And that is what we did.
We did extensive research in the region and found that women, children, and other civilians were killed as part of that assault. We spoke to 15 families who continue to look for children, very young children, in some cases 3 and 4 years old, who were last seen inside that palace that day. These deaths should not be swept away. An investigation should occur to ensure that there is accountability, that victims learn the fate of their loved ones.
Charles, I want your reaction, given that most of what the Human Rights Report, Watch report mentions is almost common knowledge among Ugandans. What was the reaction at the release of this report?
One of the major things that people are talking about here is that what Maria Barnett has done and Human Rights Watch has done is brings to light in a collated way facts that people have known for a very long time since the attacks in November last year. So basically the broad question is there anything significantly new that she introduces in her report? The majority perception here is that there isn't much, save for the fact that she mentioned one fact that hasn't been talked about, which is the fact about children being killed in that attack. But as to the scale, as to how the background to the attacks and what has happened since, I think that's been pretty much common knowledge.
But Charles, it's common knowledge that the palace must have had some children, not right?
That's highly disputed. But the question is, if you listened or watched government spokespeople yesterday, especially the spokesperson for the army and the one for the Uganda police, the major question they're not able to answer is that no opportunity was provided for an armed civilian to exit. And the second question is, could the palace have been there with parents, with people who hung around the king, without children among them? But the question they've been raising is, give us the list of children, give us their names, give us their ages, and give us their parents who are saying that their children were killed in these attacks, in these clashes.
I see. Suleiman, your general comment, and given that the reaction of the people at the time the incident happened maybe wasn't enough. I don't know. What do you think?
First of all, Douglas, children or no children, a brutal assault was done on a seemingly unarmed civilians. If there were some security personnel who were there, they were as good as unarmed. Basically, the massacre was carried out. People died. It is really unfortunate that the regime in Kampala is so arrogant, is so unashamed, and they cannot even have the courtesy to show any humility to appreciate that the people were actually massacred during broad daylight.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from that, what has not come from the Banity's report is that it was not even the first massacre. You remember, I think in March, already people had been killed in that area. Some of them were open executions by the security forces. They were never investigated. The police or the army never showed any sympathy whatsoever. It never took responsibility for those killings. So by and large, we can say this is not the first time. It is not shocking. It's not surprising. It is expected. And after all, as far as the Uganda government is concerned, I think it has become a culture. There has been intermittent abuse of human rights in Uganda by the police, by the army, which has been going on for a long time, since the 1990s. So it has become a culture. It is not surprising. And even this is not the first report from the Human Rights Court, from the Human Rights Council, to be published against the security forces in Kampala.
I see. Charles, I guess the Kampala government would differ with both the Human Rights Watch and Suleiman's contention there. As you even yourself report, the government has reacted angrily to this report, calling for an independent, impartial fact-finding mission.
Definitely, yes, which is like I would agree with Suleiman. It's not surprising that they would react angrily and disagree with what happened. That it presented a horrible scene, as Maria Barnett says in her report, the worst scale since the Northern Uganda was more than a decade ago. What came out in November last year, what everybody watched, was truly horrifying. Now, the major discussion, the major debate here, or the major effort government has invested in, is to portray the victims or the people who were killed in that attack not as not being innocent hangers around the court of the king, but rather as an armed militia that was engaged in subversive activities against the state. Government spokespeople here have been trying to push that line. The whole of yesterday, they started early in the morning by on Twitter and other social media platforms trying to push back against the Human Rights Watch report, saying what we're dealing with was a group of bandits, a group of terrorists that were committing acts, and committing treasonous acts in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And then the statement that was issued by the media center, where both the army and the police spokespeople spoke, also detailed in bullet form, outlining one, a long background, a long history to leading up to the attacks and what happened after. So the push is not on people were killed. The question is, which Human Rights Watch is trying to ask, is who was killed?
Mm-hmm.
Why were they killed?
Mm-hmm.
How did they die? But government is saying, no. The people we killed, we were dealing with a belligerent group of people. And that's where the discussion should go.
I see. But it seems it's going to be tough for the government to wade off the calls for investigation and an independent investigation. As you may have known, the U.S. government is backing the Human Rights Report's call to have an independent investigation. Just moments ago, the European Union also issued a statement in support of the same thing. And the EU statement actually addresses some of those points. Do you think the pressure from the U.S. and the EU may have an impact on government to reconsider?
I see Kampala getting angrier, at least outwardly for the consumption of the public, but internally it has to do a lot of reflection and reconsidering of its position. Because I have read the statement from the European Union ambassador in Kampala, and it's fairly strongly worded. And they're saying that if government says it has capacity, it does not lack capacity to do an investigation, then it should go ahead and do that investigation, which is essentially to back what Human Rights Watch demanded. I hadn't looked at the statement from the United States government, but I think if it speaks in the same language as the European Union, then definitely you can expect that a bit of pressure is being added to the government for it to reconsider how it's handling this whole matter.
I see. Suleiman, your take on, the pressure might be there, but there has been some pressure in the past that just fades away after some time. Do you think it's going to be different this time?
You are precisely correct. We have had cases of that nature. We have had angry reactions. In I think it was September 2009 when in Kampala there were demonstrations about the another traditional king of Uganda, and about 30 people were massacred by the security forces. So many were arrested. Again, the same outrage was shown. Some of the guys were arrested, put in prison, taken through court processes, put in prison for over 2 years, only to be released without any indictment on them. The same thing, even those ones, they just died out like that. There have been intermittent cases of so many massacres of people in Kampala. The regime is so arrogant. What is remaining now is for the president himself or some high-ranking officer to come out and remind them that he's doing a good job in Somalia or in Darfur somewhere, and that he has been putting security as a priority in Kampala, and then the whole thing will die down. Otherwise, the regime continues to act with impunity, with arrogance, and it continues to kill the way it wants.
Charles, this follows the move sometime, I think late last year, when a group of mainly opposition MPs from the area petitioned ICC asking for an investigation into possible atrocities committed by both the army and police. And ICC acknowledged receipt of their petition. Do we know how far they have gone in investigations or what steps they intend to take?
No, there is no information as for now. They acknowledged the receipt of that petition. We are waiting to see how this impacts on that investigation. By the way, ICC works. You may not hear from them, particularly because a new report has been released. But like I said, which Simon was responding to, the pressure will be significant. The pressure will be impactful. And one thing that students forget is that some of these things build into one another. Incidents like this and reports like this and statements for especially Western governments build into one another. The government is still trying to recover and move on from a disputed election earlier last year in February, coming to the first anniversary since President Seven was sworn in again, which will be May. Now, you have the incident in November, which partly has links to the election in February, because you know where it happened? Kasese area largely voted against the NRM government and President Yoweri Museveni in favor of the opposition. Now, if you put two and two together, the European Union election observer team, the Commonwealth election observer team, gave fairly critical reports of the election of last year. And then the calls for an audit of that election have not gone away. Now, if you have an incident in which, by government's admission, 103 people were killed, by Human Rights Watch, the numbers will be much higher of those unaccounted for, then you expect that if these are building into one another and then there is a petition by the ICC, there's going to be, the focus, mm-hmm. the light is being shone on what exactly has been happening. And you don't need to forget that the fact that instead of punishing the commanders who were involved in this attack, the key commander, Brigadier Luelu, has been promoted and assigned a new responsibility on promotion. I think that's significant.
I see. Well, for those just joining us, you are listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we are coming to you live from VOA Studios here in Washington. Tonight we are discussing the Human Rights Watch report on killings in Uganda. Our panelists are Charles Mwangu here, Mpagi is African Bureau Chief in Kampala, and Suleiman Mgula, an independent political analyst based in South Africa, and I'm your host Douglas Impoga here in Studio 9 in Washington. Charles there mentions the commanders being not bothered, and you see that the EU report also mentions that briefly, where it calls for equal justice. It says, considering that the ongoing court case against the Omusinga to be appropriate process for delivering justice, but they also say, ask question, why can't they scrutinize the army commanders who did that? Suleiman, the guy is accused of committing some atrocities in the Western Uganda, and he said he's promoted. So, and those who promoted him are the ones allegedly who gave him commands to do what he did. So how humanly possible is it for the government to investigate itself?
That one already shows you that the government does not have capacity to investigate itself. That one already shows you that these are cases for the ICC. Not only that, I think the other anomaly which falls in some of these regimes like that one in Uganda is the failure for the activists or for the failure to appreciate or to consolidate the number of atrocities. Once one has been committed, we tend to concentrate on the one on the plate and forget the others. We forget, for example, to understand that it is not only the people who are dealing in that particular brutal assault. Before that, about 20 people had died in Kasese alone. Again, in February 2016, people died in Wandegeya in some of the election-related activities, killed by security forces, killed by the guns of security forces. So you find that we don't consolidate, because if we are to consolidate them, maybe what the number of atrocities that have taken place in within 2 years, you will find that there is a bloodbath in a particular country. What the mistake we make is to isolate only one item and think those are the only numbers. In actual case, countries like Uganda, the security forces are really massacring people, and the people need to be protected. There has to be methods. There has to be ways in which people should be protected. Otherwise, the regime is murdering people silently.
Mm-hmm. Charles, I think the report mentioned briefly about people that can't be accounted for. Yeah. It mentioned the children, and there are whispers that some people can't actually need to be accounted for. The response by the government people is that those people should come up, and if they're dead, how can they come up and present themselves?
There's an interesting spin around that. What government has been trying to advance here is that some of the people who were killed were actually foreign fighters, and that is looking at the Democratic Republic of Congo. So the Andrew Felix Kawese, the police spokesperson, told NTV, NTV is a local national television station in Kampala, this morning, that DNA samples and toxicological samples were taken from each of about 50 bodies that were not claimed and were buried in a public cemetery. And they have been encouraging relatives to come up and claim these bodies. And claim so that they can do DNA tests and have the bodies back to their relatives. Mm-hmm. But as you know, this is a matter that is of criminal prosecution at the moment. And how government has characterized the people who were killed, very few people, if I was any, will be willing to come out and say, I am here, my relative is missing, because they wouldn't want to be linked to whatever kind of investigation or government action that is taken.
Is it true that the palace in Kasese was never handed back to the kingdom? It's still under control by the government. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
So it would even be difficult to get evidence from the scene of crime, alleged crime.
Actually, of course.
So
Douglas, what I wanted to say is that for those unclaimed body, the way Charles has said, the way the king was humiliated, the way the prime minister was humiliated and others, by the very fact that up to now, the king is under arrest in a brutal regime like that, who can have the courage to go and claim the body of his relatives? Because eventually, even yourself, like the prime minister, if you present yourself, you might be arrested, you might be followed, you might lose your life, you might be brutalized. I mean, acts of brutality in Uganda. 2 days ago, they were brutalizing journalists. They were flooring them. The policemen just brutalized journalists because they were entering into a function, a university function. So what about in a crisis like that, one of cafes? You can't expect people to present them to claim their bodies. Whatever they are talking about, these people being foreign fighters, that is a farce. They are just hoodwinking people. The fact of the matter is that whether foreigners or not foreigners, Ugandan security forces massacred human beings, and they have to account for those massacres.
I see. Charles, Suleiman mentioned about the arrest and the prosecution of the Omusinga, the king of that region. Wouldn't he, if there was an independent investigation, wouldn't he be a principal witness?
I think he would. He's at the center of it.
And in that case, because now I'm told his movements are restrained, he's virtually under house arrest, so no independent panel can access him.
And officially, he's released on bail.
Yes.
But that bail is highly restricted. And about 180 people, mainly officials and some of the Royal Guard, are still in detention, who are arrested with him, are still in detention. As a matter of fact, earlier today, there was supposed to be a hearing for a bail application for the prime minister of the kingdom. I haven't been able to update myself on how that transpired today. But a larger number of people are still in government custody, facing prosecution. The cultural leaders' movements are restricted. He needs to get permission from authorities before he can travel. He can travel, for example, to the kingdom, his kingdom or his cultural institution, and or outside of the central region. So that would raise questions on accessibility. The government must make some concession to be able to allow him access to any private investigation. But that is what government has been arguing, saying this is already a matter under criminal prosecution. So if you commission a private investigation or an independent investigation, how much are you not likely to prejudice the ongoing case?
Suleiman, it's uncommon on the continent for a sitting government to be investigated or to allow an independent investigation. Depending on the pressure that comes is brought to bear, how do you see the things ending up?
Douglas, the continent is littered with blood. All these dictators, especially the sit tight, those who have declared, who are life presidents, to put it lightly, the life presidents of this continent, all of them are committing murders and they are not investigated. In September 2016, 50 plus people died in Kisangani when they were demonstrating. Apart from the sanctions which USA has put on three generals, which we would expect soon it will be sanctioning those ones of Uganda, at least in DRC, some generals were sanctioned by the sanctions were put on them by the United States of America. We hope even in Uganda they will soon come. Apart from that, is there any investigations which have been carried on? People have been dying in Burundi. There is no investigation. People are dying in South Sudan. There is no investigation. People in Cameroon, in the English-speaking people were assaulted and died. There is no investigation. In Ethiopia, recently, demonstrations killed hundreds of people. There is no demonstration. So apart from after the regime has fallen. Otherwise, a sitting government, as you have said, Sudan, South Sudan, everywhere, you cannot get justice when there is a sitting government. That is why there was an approach. That is why they wanted to go out of the ICC. Those dictators who are committing atrocities, that is why they were spearheading a move to move out of the ICC, because the ICC was providing a window to touch them, to be able to intimidate them at least. So there is no hope so long as it is a sitting president, especially those governments like in East Africa who are known as partners, the development partners, because they are giving help in Somalia, in Darfur, and other parts of Africa where there is insurgents.
I see. But Charles, following up on Suleiman's point, for a third world landlocked poor country, if the pressure mounts from the powers that be, I'm talking about the UN, the ICC, the US, EU, how would the government wiggle itself out of this mess?
There has to be some pressure that has been working across the continent. Yes. Some of that pressure hasn't really worked across the continent. If you look at some of the available examples, and if you look, the African Union has been pushing hard for Africa to be left alone to solve its own problems and or not read from a script from the West on what its democracy and human rights parameters should be. And that you can expect from a regime like the one of Kampala. The only difference comes when receiving lectures on human rights from the West has kind of, the leaders are numb to some of that criticism. It only hurts when it comes to financial support. And as you know, many countries are going through some difficult financial times. If it comes to budget support, it comes to support projects in government, that is likely to resonate more than a lecture, whether it is at the UN or elsewhere.
I see. Lastly, Suleiman, do you see the Kampala government surviving this? Or
the Kampala government is going to survive it, but at the end of the day, people will demand justice. In Guinea, that is Camara in September 2009 killed over 150 people in the field. That is Camara is still at large, but Tumba Jacket has just been extradited from Senegal.
I see.
In Gambia, Yahya Jammeh has been killing people. But the late Soros and the soldiers, the security officers who are thought to have murdered that human rights activist, they are right now going into court.
I see.
In Sen Habre, we saw what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So whether they like it or not, let them continue giving statements, let them continue justifying the massacres which were killed, but those who are citizens of our country, those who are citizens of Africa, those who are human beings who deserve the life.
I see.
To demonstrate, even if one demonstrates against the government, whether the government feels that they will never leave power for life, but to murder someone in broad daylight is a crime against humanity, and they will be punished one day.
Okay, one word answer, Charles. Have there been a reaction from the government about the EU statement?
Not one that I know of as yet.
All right, we shall be following up that one up. Well, that's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Thank you to Charles Mwangu here, East African Bureau Chief in Kampala, and Suleiman Mugulani, independent political analyst based in South Africa. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
You're welcome.
Yep.
Always a pleasure.
Our producer was Jackson Mvunganya, and our engineer was Suleiman Tarawali. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed this program, you can access it by going to our main website. Thanks very much for tuning in. I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, in Washington, wishing you all the best.